Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ryan Scott. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Curious, we had the pleasure of speaking with Alice Mims, MD, on the utility of the IRAK4 and FLT3 inhibitor emavusertib in heavily pretreated patients with FLT3 mutated relapse or refractory AML or MDS. Emavusertib is under evaluation in these patient populations in the phase 1-2A Take Aim Leukemia trial. Dr. Mims is a medical oncologist and an associate professor in the Division of Hematology at The Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center, James, in Columbus, Ohio. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Mims discussed the rationale for launching the Phase 1-2A investigation, noting the potential implications of these findings thus far. Thank you, Dr. Mims, for taking the time to speak with us today about the Take Aim Leukemia trial. To start, what is the mechanism of action of emavusertib?
Emavusertib is a small molecule kinase inhibitor, and it actually is multi-targeted. So it's shown preclinical activity against IRAK4, FLT3, and something called CDC-like kinases or CLIC kinases, which are also becoming of interest these days.
What was the rationale for evaluating emavusertib in patients with AML or MDS?
The studies evolved, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, but specifically what the highest level of interest is for patients with either AML with FLT3 mutations or AML with specific spliceosome mutations that are UTAF1 and SF3B1. The study is also looking for patients with high-risk myelodysplastic syndrome, specifically for those same spliceosome mutations for that patient population as well. And the reason being is, one, that IRAK4 is upregulated during anti-FLT3 or other cytotoxic therapies, so it could drive resistant pathways for patients who are on FLT3 inhibitors. So it's really important to look at that, and maybe it's something that could be used, you know, initially in combination as opposed to current FLT3 inhibitors. And then for the spliceosome mutation specifically, what we see for those patients is they have excessive IRAK4 ligand, and that enhances the toll-like receptor pathway, which is frequently dysregulated in AML.
What specific criteria were used to identify and enroll patients in this trial, and what methods were used in the trial?
The study is a phase 1 dose escalation, phase 2A dose expansion. And so when the study first started, it really was for all comers, adult patients, 18 years of age and older, who had relapse refractory AML or high-risk MDS that was not responsive to hypomethylating agents. And so what's evolved over time is the study was amended to just look at those specific AML populations that I mentioned, as well as the MDS populations. And they also changed it to limit it for patients who had not received more than 2 lines of prior therapy for their treatment. And for the AML patients specifically with FLT3 mutations, they wanted to be sure they had received a FLT3 inhibitor prior in their therapy, since there are a few of those that are FDA approved in different settings.
What were the objectives of the trial?
For the phase 1 portion of the study, it's pretty typical in that they're looking at safety and tolerability in the patient populations, and to look to identify the maximum tolerated dose and recommended phase 2 dose. For the primary endpoint for the dose expansion, phase 2A portion, is to look at anti-cancer activity in those specific AML and MDS populations. And so how they're doing that is for AML specifically, looking at the proportion of patients who achieve a complete remission or a complete remission with hematologic improvement. And for the high-risk MDS patients, they're looking at overall response rate, which is defined as complete remission plus partial remission rate.
What findings have been derived from the study thus far?
The study was presented at ASH. And so what they focused on were for responses is looking at patients with relapsed refractory AML with FLT3 mutations. So there were 10 patients that were included in the dose escalation. About 9 of the patients had FLT3 ITD mutations. One had a FLT3 TKD mutation. 2 of the patients with the FLT3 ITD mutation had concurrent UTAF1 mutations. And one with the TKD mutation had an SF3B1 mutation. So the patients had been heavily treated and they saw reductions in blast count for those patients. There were no dose-limiting toxicities that were found for the patients. They also discussed that as enrollment started in the dose expansion for the phase 2A portion of the study, where they're moving forward with the 300 milligrams twice a day oral dosing, that there have been 3 patients that they've looked at with FLT3 mutations, and then 2 of the patients have had complete remission, and 1 has had a morphologic leukemia-free state. The other thing interesting to note is that the patients with the FLT3 ITD mutations who had complete remissions also had undetectable status of their FLT3 ITD mutation, MRD negative status.
What insights can be drawn from the safety profile of this agent so far?
It seems to be overall well tolerated. You know, as mentioned, there have not been, at least as what was reported, any dose-limiting toxicities in those 10 patients presented at ASH. There were no dose-limiting myelosuppression noted. There are treatment-emergent adverse events that have been seen. There are 2 studies that are currently looking at this agent in different populations, and most of those have been where they've occurred in greater than 10% of the patients treated would be CPK increases, nausea, dizziness, fatigue, diarrhea, ALT increase. One specific adverse event of special interest is they're looking at rhabdomyolysis, as they saw in preclinical animal models evidence of this. So they're following along with CPK levels. From my understanding, there have not been any clinically significant rhabdomyolysis reported in the study thus far. There may be some laboratory CPK elevation, but nothing that was not reversible for the patient.
What potential clinical implications do you foresee for the use of this agent in the treatment of hematologic malignancies?
I think it's really exciting, you know, that they're starting to see responses for these populations, especially as the agent has dual activity against different targets. And so there may be a potential targeted agent for patients with splices and mutations where there's nothing specific for that population right now is very exciting. And so that might be something that could move forward even as a single agent. And then looking also at combination regimens for, you know, this agent with, you know, either intensive induction, triplet therapy with HMA venetoclax, if that could be tolerated. And looking at it more in the upfront setting, I think would be exciting as well.
How might the findings from the TakeAim leukemia trial inform future investigations with emavusertib in patients with hematologic malignancies?
So I know, as I mentioned, that the amendment went forward to look in those specific populations for patients with FLT3 mutations, or those 2 specific splices and mutations with the UTAF1 and SF3B1. But I think there's also some discussion, and I think a lot of interest from investigators, as there are other splices and mutations that are not included, and if those could also be part of the eligibility criteria. So we'll see if that moves forward or not.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Curis. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new podcast is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.